Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Straight Popcorn Podcast. My name is Al Nichols.
And I'm Brock Benson Sharp.
And, man, it looks like Marvel has finally figured out who the hell is going to direct this new Ant-Man movie that they're trying to develop. Do you want to bear the bad news on this one?
Yeah, so Peyton Reed is directing the new Ant-Man film. For those that are not familiar with his complex body of work, he has done such great hits as Yes Man and Bring It On.
There was something else that he did too, and it's not coming to mind right now. But, you know, I would say this is a big, big contrast in styles from what we were expecting.
I'd say that there is no style in this choosing at all. I mean, you know, given that he did the breakup.
Yes, the breakup.
Which is pretty well known as one of the worst Vince Vaughn vehicles ever made. What else did he do? He did...
You know, he did a lot of directing back in the day. He did Mr. Show. He did a few episodes of that, but I mean, there's really not a lot in this guy's catalog that I was like, oh, this is good.
And it's while I'm not excited about this, I am trying to keep some perspective in mind that two of the guys, you know, that made the Winter Soldier came from How I Met Your Mother and Community. So there, you know, we have seen some comedy directors take the reins at Marvel, and it worked out fairly well too. So, you know, this may be.
Can I add a note to that though?
Yeah.
Good comedy directors.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. But I mean, the guy. You know, we are focusing on his films. I mean, he did Upright Citizens Brigade. That doesn't come easily. He also did Mr. Show with Bob and David, like you mentioned, and he also did. The Weird Al Show, which was I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, I like The Weird Al Show.
So, I mean, it's kind of one of those things, like, you got to, you know, as far as a director standpoint, I'm not defending the guy's movie catalog. But, I mean, he's also, it's like one of those things, like, do you want to go work at Starbucks or do you want to make this shitty film about Chilliers?
Right.
So, I'm trying to be reasonable about it. Like, I was really pissed off when I first heard it, and I guess that's rightfully so. But... Yeah. I'm trying to also play devil's advocate a little bit and look at it from a standpoint of he's a guy that's got to feed his family.
Well, I'm not really angry about it. I mean, yeah, I think maybe I was at first. And you know, because it kind of felt like a bait and switch. Like you expected something and all of a sudden you get this big turd like right in your lap. Like, okay, this is no good. I mean, I don't know. It's like, I mean, and I will say this, okay, out of all those films, like, what was it? Oh, what was the damn cheerleader film name?
Bring It On.
Bring It On. That was actually one of the better ones of the list of things that I saw. And I was like, ugh. That's what made my heart hurt, was that that was kind of the style going to be brought to this entire thing. But, I mean, I will say this, okay? And it's also pretty well known by this point. You know, so Adam McKay, even though he's not going to be directing this thing, like we had hoped for a minute... he's going to be coming on doing some script rewrites, but so that really, really shows you the state of that script. I mean, we all knew, but it's just even further confirmation that it really was a real big pile of shit that got left with Edgar Wright. No wonder he quit.
I do want to bring up 2 points. All right, first of all, and don't let me forget the second point. Peyton Reed did Bring It On, and I didn't realize the magnitude of the franchise of Bring It On until I was browsing through my on-demand menu the other night. There are like 5 of those fuckers, man.
Yeah. Bring It On, All or Nothing, Bring It On, In It to Win It. I actually know these names somehow.
So the guy can carry something that brings a franchise, even though they're direct to DVD. And my second point was I don't understand the Adam McKay script writing thing.
I don't either.
Because Adam McKay is an improvisational director.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird.
You know,
it's kind of a weird choice.
I thought that maybe they wanted to keep him on to some degree, maybe to save face a little bit, which, I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize that. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize that he's really more improvisational, but he has worked with Paul Rudd in the past. Maybe he does recognize some of his strengths, and maybe that's what they're looking for in this, which doesn't say a lot of confidence that they have in the director here. I mean, I think it's a little bit like, well, we have him on board for script, but maybe, you know, he's kind of like the training wheels for the director. Like, I don't know if that's really what they're going for. And that just could be, and probably is, complete speculation on my part. But it seems odd that they would keep him on board for that, because they're going to be paying him like a massive amount of money to be there. Maybe they just wanted to keep that name attached to the project to keep a little bit of credibility to it.
You know, and something that we haven't talked about yet is, and I don't want to catch any flack from the fanboys on this, but has anybody ever considered Edgar Wright might be a douchebag?
You know, I mean, there is that possibility, but it doesn't seem like it. I've heard the guy in many interviews, and there's a lot of people, like, you know, there's people who are legitimately great, nice, wonderful people who only say wonderful things about this guy. So
there's a reason why I bring that up.
Sure.
When I used to, I still kind of do off and on, but when I used to listen to Slash Filmcast, Adam Quigley left eventually, but while he was still on the program, he was actually the best part of the program to me. He was friends with, he made friends with Edgar Wright because he had written articles about him, and they ended up getting along really well, and they carried on a pretty lengthy friendship, probably over several years. And when World's End came out, Adam Quigley, as a reviewer, wasn't really pleased with the film. And when he posted his article on Twitter, Edgar Wright sent him a direct message basically telling him, "I can't believe you do that to me," and defriended him.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that necessarily seems, means he's a jackass. I think that maybe just...
Seems really petty, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that's just immaturity, you know? I mean, that's really what that boils down to. It could be, I don't know, maybe he expected more, or, I mean, I don't even... I haven't read the article or, you know, I will... I have to agree with you. That's really kind of petty, but I don't know if that says anything about him, like he's a real dickhead or something like
that.
Well,
I don't personally think he's a dickhead. I just I think everybody's like needs to take a step back for a minute and realize that maybe there was something really bad about what he wanted to do.
It could be.
And you know, maybe he didn't handle this in the best way.
Well, I mean, I don't really know Edgar Wright, honestly, for really working with major studios in cooperation with a lot of the projects that he does. He really likes full control over those things. That was always going to be a problem with him and Marvel. Like, there's no scenario where that wouldn't have been an issue. So, really, it was just something that we thought, oh, well, maybe he is getting along, you know, fine. And as we find out, that's not really the case. So, I don't know. I mean, it was clearly, there was some bad blood, and I think that's why it all built up to, you know, how it eventually ended up and everything like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, he may have not had the best story. He may not have been the best director for this. I can't say the same for this new director, but I guess I'm going to give it a try. I hope whatever they end up doing, though, I hope it's at least decent, you know, which they need to do a little bit better than decent with, especially with a, like a, I don't even know what tier to put this character on, to be honest.
Yeah. And again, I'm mostly playing devil's advocate. I thought it'd bring a little bit of interesting conversation about, you know, everything that we've been seeing. But you know, I'm willing to give this guy a chance and see what he does and kind of judge the product and its merits on what I see on the theater. So
yeah, and from the new synopsis, which we're not going to read here, but you can definitely go online and do a search for it. We'll probably post it to our website, which I'll mention a little bit later. But it, you know, it seems like it's more like a heist film, a heist that actually ends up saving the world. I'm like, as long as it isn't anything like Tower Heist, we'll be good.
Tower Heist.
Yeah. That was the first thing I thought when I read the term heist, is that film is still kind of stuck in my head.
You know what, L? I can take a shit and I won't charge you anything for it. The studio took a shit with Tower Heist and they charged a lot of money for that.
Yeah, they didn't make much of it back either. Okay. All right. Well, we also have some other big, big casting news this week. Vincent D'Onofrio was cast in the Daredevil series as Wilson Fisk, or more commonly known as the Kingpin. So tell me, how do you feel about this?
I am really stoked about this, actually, because I think that Vincent D'Onofrio is a really underrated actor. Maybe he's not underrated, but I don't think he gets enough attention, I guess is the point I was trying to get to. But I think he makes a perfect person to play this role. And I honestly hope they don't shave his head.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of ways you could pursue this character. I mean, they clearly did one way back when they did the original Daredevil film with Ben Affleck. It was Michael Clark Duncan, right? At the time? Yeah.
Yeah.
He was in that one. I mean, that was a really kind of more, you know, that was more of a, in many ways, other than the fact that, of course, you know, Michael Clark Duncan wasn't a big, fat, white guy. He was actually a really strong, you know, kind of like prize fighter kind of character. But otherwise, the character was very, very similar, you know. This one seems like it is a much more different take, and it seems more like a real crime lord, you know, which is really interesting to me. And Vincent D'Onofrio, I mean, I've said it before, if you've seen the guy on Law & Order Special Victim, not Special Victims, Criminal Intent, there's so many of those damn titles, man. Yeah. It's hard to keep them straight.
You know, Law & Order
Special Andy Victims Roberts Criminal
Edition.
Unit. but yeah, you know, he actually did a really, really great job, like, getting into this kind of crazy character. And there are plenty of roles that really exhibit this incredible skill inside, you know, this man, but I always go back to that show because I just remember, like, seeing such a range, and you don't expect that from a Law and Order series. You expect, you know, a procedural, but if he could bring that type of intensity, not that character, mind you, but that type of intensity into this role, which I can only assume that he will, I am really happy with this choice, and I can't wait.
Well, see, you know, I think you're discounting yourself a little bit with that, because, like, I do kind of hope he brings some of that Law and Order to the character. Yeah. Like, the like, scenes on Law and Order when he's, like, interrogating someone and you can tell he's really pushing their buttons. Mm-hmm. And he is so good at that.
Yeah, like, you have some points there, yeah.
I think that if he can take that to another level in an evil manner, mm-hmm. like, he's going to fucking own this role.
Yeah, you know, this casting choice, man, I just think was unbelievable. And I was so happy. A big smile, like, you know, popped up on my face when I heard about this. Because it's just, this is dream casting. You know, this really is. Like, they don't get it right all the time. And I have no problem with who they cast as Daredevil. Because honestly, I mean, like, I don't really know. And I have to assume that with Marvel, they've done a great job with casting their characters. So yeah. I'm not going to start thinking now that they're really screwing up. So I'm going to have faith with them on that. But this one was just right on the money.
I agree. I think this should have been bigger news. I guess it was. I mean, it was trending on Facebook. So I guess that's a good sign. But yeah, people give this dude credit. And this is a fucking badass choice.
Yeah. I mean, I love Vincent D'Onofrio actually back in Men in Black. I thought he was one of the best parts of that film. You know, I would always quote with my family and my friends, you know, a lot of the lines from that movie. And it was all his lines and stuff like that, you know, so.
The first movie I ever saw him in was Full Metal Jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that?
Yes, I have. But again, long, long time ago.
There's some insanity in that role, too. Yeah. So he's really good at it. And if he can bring that to a boss, I'm all for it.
He's a versatile actor who has a big range, and we get to see that in this character, I think, because it is such a big character that no one has really brought the full weight, well, the full weight when I say it, to the big rotund Kingpin character, but no one's really brought that gravitas to the character, so I'm happy about that. I think this is going to be good. There was something else that we wanted to talk about since we are talking about Daredevil, one of the recovered IPs from Fox. Now, Brock and I were talking about this just, you know, amongst a conversation I don't know, this past week or whatever. But we were kind of curious, like, whatever really happened to the Punisher and the Ghost Rider and the Blade, you know, IPs and stuff like that. Because those were off at other studios. Ghost Rider was off at Sony along with Spider-Man. And Punisher was over at Lionsgate. And I'm not sure who had... I think Fox had Blade. And so they made their films and stuff like that. And we're like, oh, whatever happened to those? This was interesting. Last year, apparently, all these IPs actually went back to Marvel. So currently, they do control Punisher and Ghost Rider and Blade. Now, I don't see a future right now anyway with Ghost Rider and Blade. But when I was thinking about like this entire like Marvel series that they're coming out on Netflix, my mind immediately went to Punisher. Like, that's interesting that they're not developing this property right now. Like, how do you think of, that they'll probably introduce the Punisher into this? Because I imagine that if they do bring him back, it'll probably be the same way they did Daredevil. And they'll, and it's even a possibility, I'm not even saying this like I know anything, but I think that a great way to bring the Punisher back would be, like, to actually introduce him in the Daredevil series.
Possibly. I'm really on the fence on that one. Like, I can see that working. Or I think they may try, they need to get someone that's a really good writer behind it, first of all. And I think they need to do it in a way that it's very similar to kind of a balance between Breaking Bad and also The Wire.
Yeah.
And try to approach, I would really like to see this because, you know, Marvel does have that series. Is it Marvel? What is it called? It's the
Marvel Knights, but back in the day, they used to be called Max Comics.
Okay. They don't really have that Vertigo thing. You know, they don't really have a lot of issues of any comic like that. And Punisher, to me, is probably the closest thing. And so they could make it a part of the Marvel universe, but they could also make it more aimed at an adult action type TV, and do something that's more of a character study and something for the adults that's R-rated, and bring that Marvel branding, bring the interesting character study, and do something a little grittier than usual.
Right.
So I mean, I could see why they would put it in Daredevil. It's not out of question. I just think that this might be kind of cool as a standalone thing that kind of meets up later.
Yeah. I mean, my thought was is that there's a way of introducing the character, like, you know, bring Frank Castle into the world because, you know, NYPD cop in some variations. Is that consistent with all the stories that they've told about him? Because I know he was a soldier in Vietnam and, you know, his family was killed. There's some details about the character that is always solid, but there's some that seem to shift and change over time. But I could be wrong about that. I will be honest. I'm not the most familiar with the Punisher's entire backstory. I know enough. But he always seemed like an intriguing character to me, and he was much different than anything else that Marvel was writing. Close to Daredevil, but this guy was a little bit more off the chain and really willing to kill anyone and was not really a good guy. And not even really an anti-hero. More like a straight-up villain, you know, just a mass murderer. And he would target people who were guilty, of course, but not a good guy. So, I mean, if they're going to explore this IP, and they ultimately will, of course, I think Netflix is the great proving ground to do that because they can do a series on that and they can really focus in on, you know, like some aspects of this character because, well, all the movies that they've made have basically been shit. You know, not a lot of great things. The only thing that's been done that was good with Punisher was actually that little short that they did. Not that they did, but what's the guy's name? Jane, the one who played the Punisher in the first...
Thomas Jane.
Yeah, remember he did that little fan thing that he created himself where he played the Punisher?
Yeah,
that was actually pretty cool. Like, I was like, I could get into something like that. That would be interesting. I guess we'll see ultimately. But
you know, it would be really good to deliver this property to Netflix. Joe Carnahan.
You know, I would have to agree with that. I think that's actually a really good choice.
Because he did. I don't know. Did you ever see The Gray? Yeah, I
finally saw that. Yeah.
Could you imagine it directed like that?
I think that would be really cool, actually. Yeah. I think that would, visually and story-wise, that would really bring something new to the character, because in the last, you know, in all the incarnations that they've done, it's always been super violent or really over the top. Actually, I'll give you, that last film wasn't all that bad when it actually came to Ray Stevenson as the Punisher, but it was the villain. Dominic West was, like, way over the top. It felt like someone compared him to Two-Face in Batman Forever, and I'm like, yeah, that's a really good comparison to make.
Yeah.
You know, there was just a lot of problems. Like, it went into campy, like, you know, a really horrific violence, and just became ridiculous, you know. And they were so close. They were really, really close to doing something, like, decent with that at the very least. But they just really fell short. So, I don't know. They really need someone who understands a good story and has the ability to see violence as not, like, the main key component, but, like, a necessity, you know? So, I think you're right on that. I think I would like to see that version of Punisher.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope that they do something decent with it. I think the best spot, we both agree, is Netflix for this. Now, as far as Ghost Rider and Blade go,
yeah,
I don't see anything for them right now. Like, there's just too much that still hasn't. It's kind of unconquered. And I just don't think the interest is there. I think that they could be, like, if they're rolling out phases with the Netflix thing, it could be cool later on. I'm sure they could work them into a story that would bring them to a new audience.
Right.
But outside of that, I think it's too soon.
I don't even think they do anything currently with Ghost Rider in the Marvel comics. Like, I think it's a character that they really haven't done anything with in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I never was interested in him anyway. So when the movies came along, I saw, like, the first one, and I was just like, huh? You know, like, I just did not care. And, I mean, Blade is cool, too, but again, these were kind of from that 70s era of, you know, trying to do some, like, different things at Marvel other than they're just stereotypical superheroes, and you had a lot of anti-heroes come along during that time, and that's when Punisher and Ghost Rider and Blade and a variety of others came along. But, like I said, I do see a future with Punisher. I do see him being a part of this world, you know, that really, really dark corner of this world. Just Ghost Rider, though, and Blade at this point, like, you have to bring in the whole vampire thing. And with Ghost Rider, you'd have to bring in the whole, like, you know, God and stuff like that. And, like, a man being cursed to roam the planet, you know, basically working for, like, the Ghost Rider worked for the devil, right? You know?
Well, Ghost Rider will probably, I would almost guarantee, if the Netflix thing goes well, mm-hmm. Ghost Rider will be worked in. And there's one reason why.
Hmm.
Doctor Strange.
You're right.
And he could bring a connection between those two properties a little bit.
See him being retooled, to be honest. And I think that will even happen with Doctor Strange, even though they'll bring in that mysticism kind of ideology into the characters. I think they won't do anything different than what they did with Thor. You know, I think it's going to be very, you know, like, scientifically driven, you know, trying to combine science and faith into something, you know, or magic, rather, into something something like that, I guess. So,
yeah.
Well, that's pretty much it for that. But we have some other news this week. Ghostbusters! they are getting a new theatrical re-release, which I am incredibly excited about. And they're also coming back. They're doing some new Blu-rays, hopefully with some better special editions and stuff like that. What do you think?
You know, I hope they Lucas that shit out, man. I hope, like, Slimer blinks more.
Changes colors, maybe.
Yeah,
double the slime on Peter when he gets slimed by.
Yeah, I hope Sigourney Weaver gets a decent haircut.
Yeah.
You know, things like that.
More
but no.
the arms of B. Arthur coming out of the couch cushion.
Yeah, oh. It's maybe some elderly boobs. That would be awesome. But seriously, no, I'm so stoked to see this on the big screen again. And I'm actually excited to take my kids to see it because they're huge Ghostbusters fans.
Mm-hmm.
And the Blu-rays I'm kind of interested in because I don't know if you have seen some of the more high def copies of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of pixelated a little bit. I mean, it's not the worst transfer I've ever seen, but it's a little pixelated. So I'm hoping they might clean up the negative a little bit.
It was a little rushed. I mean, I saw, you know, I was at one of those movie screenings where they'll play, like, older films and stuff like that. And they did Ghostbusters. And this was a couple of years back. And the quality of the film was really bad. It was almost unwatchable, just because like there was so much, you know, deterioration to the actual stock and everything like that. And I was a little bit disappointed by that, you know. But I would love to go back to theaters, rewatch this again with cleaned up footage, you know. No additions or anything like that. They don't need to do any of that. Just clean it up, clean up the audio, you know, maybe relay some tracks and do whatever they need to, you know, and restore some of the colors, because that definitely has been lost. But I think that's what they're doing. I think that's what they're finally getting around to, which about damn time. So I'm happy about that. It'd be great though if they, and I know some people may not agree with me, but I would like to see a Ghostbusters and a Ghostbusters 2 double feature. That would be kind of cool.
I was just thinking the same thing, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Great minds, right?
Yeah. I mean, I know the second film gets a lot of shit, and the second film gets a lot of shit from people my age, you know, like people who are like 30 or you know, in our age group and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, you know, all of you were about 5 to 10 years old when that film came out. It was awesome. All right, stop complaining just because you became an adult. And it's like, oh, it wasn't as good as the original and stuff like that. I'm like, hell no. I thought it was a great film. And I love the fact that it was, like, ridiculous. And they're like, oh, the Statue of Liberty walking through the city. I'm like, is that any more ridiculous than a giant marshmallow man stomping through Manhattan?
Yeah, I still like it. I saw it in the theater when it came out, and I think that, as usual, people kind of put too much stock in comedy sometimes.
Yeah.
That they're supposed to be like this. I don't know. It's weird. But with that said, we did find out that Ernie Hudson says that that Ghostbusters 3 should be shooting in fall of 2014 or spring 2015.
Oh, that just excites me to no end. That would really, really make me happy. And then also kind of lines up again what we said last week about Ruben Fleischer, you know, that he's possibly going to be coming on to do this project. So, I mean, not to say there's any confirmation of that, but seems likely, possibly, you know. So I'm really, really happy about that. It may be horrible. I don't know. I mean, that's the whole problem with, you know, them pulling out certain films, but I'm no less excited about the fact that we'll have another Ghostbuster film, especially after so many years, like 30 years of people talking about, you know, the films coming back.
Do you think with Ruben Fleischer being involved that there's any chance of Bill Murray making an appearance?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little bit different story now with Bill Murray, because I know that he was sort of on bad terms with Harold Ramis, right? You know, like they had a falling out at some point. And I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, well, I don't know what that had to do with, but I think that was a major part of his decision not to go back to Ghostbusters, or why he was always so standoffish about giving a commitment for those films. I don't know. I mean, if things really do get patched up with him at the end of the day, and who's to say? I mean, he may come back just because, you know, maybe sentimental reasons, or I don't know, maybe just because it's a better script and a better director involved and a much better vision going on. So
and a director he's worked with.
What did he do with him?
He did Zombieland with him.
Oh my God, you're absolutely right. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, you know, that's a big possibility.
Yeah, and that was probably one of the best uses of Bill Murray I've ever seen, actually. But so I think I think there could be a chance based on that. I wouldn't get my hopes up, but I think it would be cool. Mm-hmm. But if not, I'm kind of wondering what they're going to do with this. And hopefully we'll hear some information about it soon.
Yeah, let's hope. Well, speaking of Ghostbusters, you know, some of the cast members that we already mentioned with Sigourney Weaver. We have some Avatar news, which we don't typically cover Avatar news because, well, I don't think Brock's ever seen Avatar, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I've seen it, and I hated it.
I've seen it and hated it, too. I had to watch it twice, unfortunately. I was at my boss's Christmas party, and he wanted to show off his high-definition 72-inch TV and had to play Avatar because of how visually stunning the film was.
I did not like it. I mean, I didn't see it in theaters in 3D, which I hear is the hype. But I mean, to me, the direction, the look of the film was awful. Mm-hmm. I didn't think the story held up. And I hate to use the overused term, but it, to me, was Fern Gully with machine guns.
Yeah, pretty much.
I just thought it would. I think that they're in for a real surprise with this, because I don't think there's enough fans of this film for them to carry three more films.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Dances with Wolves was one movie, and this is essentially the same story. You know, it's like, I don't get this at all. And not only do I not get the film, I don't get how Sigourney Weaver returns in this new film. I mean, clearly playing a new character, because, well, the character she played before is dead, was clearly killed.
Well, maybe they'll do like a... This would get me to go see Avatar 2. If they make Avatar, but it's just the characters, and they redo the entire film A Weekend at Bernie's with Sigourney Weaver as the Bernie role. Now, that I would pay to see.
Oh, God. I mean, I don't... Well, I was thinking for a second, like, is this like a Ripley's clone kind of thing from Aliens?
Oh, and that got awful.
I mean, or a twin, and that would be even worse, honestly, just because it's like, oh, she could be a cousin. Well, great, Patty Duke, you know? It's the weirdest thing, but, I say it's the weirdest thing. That's not the weirdest thing about this whole film. It's that there are, do you know how many movies that they're making, and, like, the release schedule for these? Like, have you actually read into that?
No, I just know it's supposed to be like two or three or something. Yeah, I don't care enough to read it.
There are three more movies coming, and they're coming out every single year starting 2016, 2017, and 2018.
I don't think this is going to fare well for them. I really don't. I think a lot of people have forgotten the movie existed. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other half that like loves it because I saw it in 3D. And then there's one more half that's just like, oh, fucking James Cameron made that shit.
Well, I know. Look. There's a lot of people have said this. I agree. The only reason he made those damn films is that he wanted something that he could say, hey, I created this. This was mine. You know, kind of George Lucas was envying James Cameron for Titanic back when he did the prequel films. It's kind of the reverse in this situation. He's envying people like Lucas and others who have created something. I mean, look, James Cameron has made some really masterful films in the past. You know, some really, really great films. And, I mean, he hasn't done so in quite some time, mind you. I mean, I think he's gotten a little too preoccupied with, well, maybe hobbies or whatever. And there's no problem with that. But, you know, you can't make Star Wars happen. You know, Star Wars just has to be Star Wars. And this isn't that. This is like a ridiculous political-driven kind of, you know, drivel. It makes no sense. It's not a great story. I think if they said anything, they said everything in the first film. I don't get why they're making sequels, other than the fact that they're looking at the promise of a lot of money coming into their coffers and stuff like that. I personally think they're going to be really disappointed.
Yeah, I do too. I think they should probably slow it down a little bit.
Yeah, and not make a commitment for like three films based off of one film that did pretty well. Well, when I say pretty well, I think didn't it break a billion?
Oh, yeah, but I just don't see the demand. I really don't.
Yeah, I think it was a novelty film that did really, really well back in whatever year it came out, 2010 maybe. But this doesn't have a future in my eyes. All right, now speaking of franchises that do have futures and things that people do want to see, Batman versus Superman, and there's not a lot of news going on here. We saw the photos of Batman in the Batmobile a couple weeks ago, and there were some photos that looked like they were maybe moldings for costumes, but it was weird positions. It wasn't moldings for costumes. It was actually the framework of a giant, I think it's 14-foot Superman statue that's currently being erected on set. I think in Detroit is where they're filming this film, so I know I have a lot of facts here, don't I? But anyway, there was a lot of photos actually taken online, which you can actually go find, because I'm going to give credit to these guys. They're the ones who posted them over at Batman Movie News. They got some photos in from a fan who lived in the area and saw these things being erected, and he took a photo of this massive new like Superman statue going up. It was pretty cool, actually, from what I saw. And
you said erected.
Yeah, technically that would be the right term.
Move on.
And anyway, they're also right now currently shooting scenes over the LexCorp offices, which they kind of got a glimpse of the logo a little bit, but not really. So, I mean, things are happening right now over there in Detroit, and they're filming.
Yeah, I don't know what to say except some dude took some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say it's kind of interesting that it is a 14-foot Superman statue, which leads me to question how far in the future Batman versus Superman takes place. Mm-hmm. So we both know at the end of Man of Steel, maybe Superman was kind of a hero, but mm-hmm. he kind of fucking destroyed their town, too.
Yeah.
So I have a speculation that this film takes place at least 10 years plus.
You know what? That's a very, very big possibility because, I mean, well, here's what I know, okay? The Superman statue did exist in the comic books. That was a big thing, you know, because, but, you know, that was him, like, being there for a really long time, and it was kind of erect. Again, I'm using the word erected.
Boing-yo-yoing.
It was placed there. It was built there just to kind of as a monument to Superman. In fact, I think it was built actually at the death of Superman. So I don't know. It definitely implies that there has been some sort of, like, time lapse, you know, between the previous film and this one. And maybe that means Batman was a little bit bigger part of this world. So it's possible that when we get into this, it may not be Batman Superman's first encounter. You know, I don't know. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it's possible.
Yeah, and I mean, we both speculate a little bit that, you know, even after what Kevin Smith said, which, you know, he said that they were playing like a 5 or 6 film arc, which I don't know if he really said.
Well, said that, but he's only speculating as a fan.
Right.
But people, you know, take it seriously because it's Kevin Smith and he knows the director and he knows the star of the film. So,
which could be some real brilliance on Warner Brothers' part. Because, like, let's look at it this way. I mean, if this takes place 10 years plus after Man of Steel, which we haven't confirmed yet, mm-hmm. Which would really kind of get us out of origin territory with these films, which would be kind of a nice breath of fresh air for a superhero film. So let's just get into it. We know these characters. We don't need to do all this.
Mm-hmm.
So where Marvel has solo films, and the Avengers is kind of like the gala, so to speak, at the end. We may just get a bunch of films that are like Avengers films, where Batman versus Superman with Wonder Woman here. Maybe the next film is, you know, Green Lantern and Hawkeye. I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas. But there's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah.
To be able to do stuff like that versus going with solo films and just kind of building a general arc altogether. And if they do that and they pull it off brilliantly, they can give Marvel a run for its money because I think people are kind of tired of the origin story at this point.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, unfortunately for Marvel, they've gotten out of origin story realms except for any of the new characters they're introducing, like Doctor Strange and, of course, Ant-Man. But other than that, and actually even with Ant-Man, since they're going with a different storyline and Hank Pym has already been Ant-Man for quite some time, you're not having to tell his origin story really either, except for the new guy. But, yeah, I mean, this was a smart move on their part. We don't need another Batman origin story. I want to see a really cool kick-ass Batman with a good story.
Me
and,
too.
And it really looks more and more as they go that this is clearly... this is probably going to be the closest that we're ever going to see on a big screen of the Dark Knight Returns, you know, because it looks like the Batman is going in that direction. Even the Batmobile had a little bit of the vibe of that tank vehicle. I mean, it gets compared a lot, of course, to the Tumbler in the previous film, which I think the reason they made that had a lot to do with the Dark Knight Returns because, well, every Batman film that we've had, aside from the Schumacher films, have all basically been inspired by those books by Frank Miller. So I don't know. I mean, I'm excited for this and I think that they'll do a good job with it, hopefully. But I don't know. I just seeing some of the sets and stuff like that and kind of getting a bigger picture of this world, it's shaping up a little differently than I thought it would. And that interests me. So,
yeah. So with that said, instead of Warner Brothers doing the right thing, maybe they should spread some of that love over to 20th Century Fox, who's now planning on doing a Gambit solo film first. before X-Men Apocalypse, which I think Elle and I are on the same page. This is kind of a terrible idea, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is not... Look, you know, and I think we were talking about this, but pretty much with these X-Men characters, they're an ensemble group. You know, they don't really all that... They don't work all that well away from each other. The only characters that really works for is Wolverine. And unfortunately, he's always been the predominant, you know, story point in all the films that they've done. But, you know, you have all these characters. You have these really, really cool characters that really should stand out and really actually benefit from having interaction with their team. We're not going to get that, you know, if we do that with a Gambit solo film. I think that was just... This is the studio kind of trying to do what G.I. Joe Retaliation did with Channing Tatum. I don't know if you remember this, but like he really wasn't in the sequel. They didn't see him as a viable option. And they actually pulled the film from the summer lineup and pushed it back to February or March of the following year just so they could add more scenes of Channing Tatum, because all of a sudden he became a big star because of Magic Mike and because of, 21 Jump Street. And they're like, we have to have him in here. And I think that the reason that they're thinking of doing a Gambit solo film is because they got Channing Tatum and they're seeing it as, hey, you know, if we have to wait, you know, we're not going to be able to put X-Men Age of Apocalypse out until when? Maybe 2017. And so they're thinking, well, we can definitely do a Channing Tatum, you know, Gambit film and get that out maybe 2015, 2016 early, you know, and we'll get another film in there, make some more money off of this IP. But this is this is where Fox, like, they do something really great and then they do something incredibly stupid. And I think this is like going back to that end of the spectrum now.
Which is most of the time. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just personally think that this is a bad mistake on their part, and they should just, you know, let the character come up in the film and then take it from there. Yeah. In all honesty, we all don't have to follow the Marvel, formula on filmmaking. I mean, this can be just something that's strictly X-Men. I mean, it doesn't have to be another spinoff or anything like that. I mean, I'm still to this day trying to figure out how the hell Wolverine Origins got made, because that was like definitely ranks up there in one of the worst films I've ever seen.
It's not very good. I mean, I was excited for it just because it was another X-Men film, and I thought it couldn't be any worse than The Last Stand, but shit.
It was awful. And they had the weird leak that happened. Do you remember that?
No. Oh, yeah. That's right. The film came out like weeks in advance on like the torrents and stuff like that. And it was actually like a production cut that got leaked.
It was.
After that they started like stamping the name of the person who was going to be watching those cuts and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, I don't know. 20th Century Fox needs to slow the fuck down.
Well, I mean, look, I wouldn't have a problem with a Gambit film if, for instance, they were to include other X-Men into the film and really make it more of an X-Men film. You don't have to put Wolverine in it. You don't even have to put in, you know, some of the A-string X-Men into it. You just have to put in some interesting characters. I mean, look, they have a possibility, for instance, you know, I've always kind of liked the dynamic between Rogue and Gambit, and I may be thinking more about the cartoon series than even the comics, but, you know, there was something there, and I think that would be interesting, and Anna Paquin is now wrapping up on True Blood. You know, there's a possibility you could do something with that, but I don't know exactly what era this Gambit hails from, so... And again, the big problem, like, you've got the 60s moving forward all the way into the, you know, early 2000s with these characters. So we were talking about this the other day, but there's, like, Alex Summers is, like, 57 years old by the time Scott Summers is in his early 30s, late 20s, you know? It's like, there's problems now.
Problems. With your continuity.
Yeah. So... You know, I would be interested to see something with Gambit if, again, like, please bring in some other X-Men, even if it's not traditionally people that have been with him. Like, we haven't seen Forge yet, you know, wouldn't mind seeing a Forge film, you know, with him in it. And I don't know, there are plenty of characters they can choose from.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Well, moving on from that, we have some other news here. Why don't you go ahead and take this?
The Stand's getting a new adaptation. It's going to be 3 hours long, and it's an R-rated adaptation by The Fault in Our Stars director Josh Boone. Which this dude altogether is interesting to me right now, because The Fault in Our Stars went up against Edge of Tomorrow and completely trampled it at the box office. Which is the type of film you wouldn't expect to make almost $50 million opening weekend. So this dude's definitely got a craft. And so I'm excited about this. The Stand that came out on ABC back in the 90s. Did you ever see that?
A part of it, not the whole thing.
It's so Disneyed out. I mean, it's not what I read on the pages as much. And it's ABC. I mean, its special effects are pretty low budget. Even more low budget than Doctor Who. And I don't know. I just want to see a better director take it, get a better cast. I want to see this R-rated adaption and see where they take it.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. I would be interested in seeing it. I never read The Stand, but I don't know. I've never really been like not that I've hated Stephen King's work and stuff like that. I've just never really been into it very much.
But, he has hits or misses. I mean, he it's with every bad book, he has a good one that follows. And and I get it. Like he writes like, I mean, someone could be getting like roast beef at the cafe and he'll spend 10 pages on that shit.
Right.
And sometimes I'm just like, I get the detail, but do we need this much detail? But the core of the story, that's where his brilliance lies.
So. Well, I mean, I'm totally down for it. I when I first heard about The Fault in Our Stars, my thought was like, kind of goes into, oh, okay, the tween Twilight generation, you know. But from everything that I've heard, it was actually a really remarkable story. People were actually saying it was better than the book ever was. So I was like, okay, that's definitely interesting. You don't hear that very often, so. And I actually didn't know the fact that it trampled Edge of Tomorrow, which I actually did see and I really enjoyed. So, but that's pretty interesting because that just typically doesn't happen. You don't go up against like a Tom Cruise vehicle, especially like an action-based vehicle. And
with Doug Liman.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it's just like, nope, sorry guys, you're taking second place opening weekend. That just is unheard of.
Yeah, so I'm excited for it, and to me, I mean, I haven't seen Fault of the Stars, but from what I understand from friends of mine, it's actually a really good film, and why not?
I'll go check it out. I think that sounds pretty cool now. So, also, let's see. This is David Fincher and Rooney Mara could reunite for Red Sparrow. Do you know more about this?
Yeah, it's basically a film, and from what I understand, Mara is supposed to play a Russian spy that is forced to become a sparrow, which a sparrow is the trained in the art of seduction. She uses it against a CIA officer, and they actually end up falling in love, bringing down both of their agencies down with them.
Oh, nice.
So it's weird. I really want to see it because Fincher is one of my favorite directors. I mean, he did Fight Club, he did Seven,
right,
and he did The Social Network, which we both know on paper should have never worked.
So I
trust his instincts that he's going to do something really interesting with this, but it's just kind of hard to like accept the storyline, especially since there was a very similar storyline on The Americans.
Very much so.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's going to be cool to see another take. Love Fincher. He always delivers. So I'm going to give him my trust on this one. I just hope it doesn't end up looking anything like The Americans.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it will ultimately. I mean, I don't know. There's sometimes when I'm watching The Americans, I'm like, I'd rather this just be a 2-hour movie, you know, which is kind of the opposite thought. Like, oh, they should really expand this. And I love The Americans, don't get me wrong, but sometimes those stories can go a little slow and you're like, you can condense this a little bit. So I don't know, it may be really interesting. I've always been really into spy thrillers and films and stuff like that. So and I really love The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It had a lot of these elements in it. So I would be excited to see that, and I trust that Rooney Mara could really do something interesting on screen and do something other than, you know, Lisbeth Salander as well, which I think a lot of people may expect, you know, because that happens a lot, but I would end up, I expect to see something totally different, so.
Yeah, she's a great actress, and she's a beautiful girl, so.
Yeah. And then, of course, this is something else, Killer Joe TV series in development. Now, I know nothing about this. This is all you, man.
So, Killer Joe was a play originally, and it was a film by William Friedkin, which, for those that don't know, William Friedkin did The Exorcist and several other films, The French Connection being another one. So, very, very famous director. Me and my girlfriend set out to watch Killer Joe one night because it's Matthew McConaughey. And he's playing a gritty role. You got to be a little bit interested. This is before his, like, reconnaissance or whatever you want to call it.
His all right.
So this is the most fucked up movie I've ever seen in my life, dude. Like, okay, I'll just put it this way. There's a scene in the movie where he rapes this girl. Not in the way that you imagine it. Not the accused style. Mm-hmm. Like, makes her give a chicken leg a bone, a blowjob at gunpoint.
Okay. Holy
this
shit.
This was in a movie, like a fried chicken leg. Damn. I have never in my life seen anything like this, hell. And somehow someone's like, well, that movie with the blowjob fried chicken leg scene sure would make a great TV series.
Yeah, I'm like, now you're describing that, I'm like, okay, how did they turn this into a TV series? It's clearly going to be on HBO or something, because it's definitely not going to be on ABC, the family lineup.
The whole plot of the film is, and I might get it a little wrong because it's been a minute since I've seen it, but Matthew McConaughey basically plays a cop in this town. He gets hired as a hitman to kill this guy's parents, because they want the insurance money. It's supposed to be this grand heist. Well, the guy can't deliver the down payment because Matthew McConaughey's character doesn't do it on faith alone. Mm-hmm. So to reassure him that they are going to get the money for him, he gives the Emil Hirsch's character, gives Matthew McConaughey his 13-year-old sister to hold as like collateral.
Hmm.
And they start to have a relationship and a lot of underage sex. Really fucking awkward movie. Do not watch this with your mother.
Yeah, I'm not going to be watching it with anyone present.
And the movie just gets crazier and crazier, which from understand, this is the way the play is too. But my God, a chicken leg getting a blowjob at gunpoint.
Wow. I mean, and this is becoming a TV series.
Yes. So, you know, gather your kids and your grandparents and sit down and get ready to watch this noise. I don't know what to say about this.
TGIF.
This should have honestly been in. I mean, it's that's the worst one I've ever done. But that's how fucking weird this whole thing is.
I'm sorry.
What? Sorry.
Oh, God. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I would agree. That definitely belongs in. What? But damn. Okay, do you know what channel they're trying to put this on or anything like that? Or did they just announce the series?
I have no idea. Okay. I can't even believe it's a TV series, much less going on a channel.
Oh, man. Well, that's definitely interesting. I'll be keeping an eye out for that just because I can't believe it's actually going to happen. And I wouldn't be surprised if this doesn't ever make it to television, if this isn't just an idea that people are bouncing around because they're like, we could maybe do something with it. So, because, you know, Hannibal is big, and of course Bates Motel is getting a lot of traction. There's a lot of shows right now, and I think that's
apples and oranges, sir.
I know, but I think what people are thinking is that really, you know, individuals are getting into these psychological, you know, horror thrillers and stuff like that being turned into television series.
Yeah,
so.
Well, this is definitely one that could stand just to be left alone, but yeah. Some producer snorted enough coke and thought it was a great idea to turn it into a TV show, so moving on.
Well, this is pretty interesting, actually. Study says streaming will overtake physical media revenue in 2016.
And it's about damn time. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm kind of, it's like the music industry. I'm so tired of the old fogey way of doing shit. Yep. Like, you know, I'd had this discussion about like, why do we have to go to the theater every time to see an old film? And sometimes we miss those old films. Like, I'm in that conundrum right now. I just went through a complete remodel of my house. We moved all this stuff. I miss Godzilla. I miss Neighbors. I miss Amazing Spider-Man 2. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the theaters have already kind of escorted those out of the building already.
Right.
And so what am I, here I am stuck in limbo. And I could just sit at home, and I don't mind if I can stay in the privacy of my own home for the movie tickets that I would go pay for me and Killian to see a film. Mm-hmm. I would pay $15 easily to watch one of these movies in the privacy of my own home.
Oh, absolutely.
And hopefully this happens to kind of usher that along. I'm not expecting them to do same day releases, mm-hmm. but to kind of give us a taste before it hits DVD and Blu-ray.
Right.
Would be nice.
Yeah, I would like that. I mean, it hasn't made any sense why they've held back so long, except that they do an entire, like, media blitz and marketing and stuff like that to push a product, you know, once it goes into theaters and then once it comes back to video. And the studio system has been so slow to figure out how to make revenue off of digital media, which to me, it seems really simple. You take the money and you put it in your bank account, and that's how you make money off of digital media. But they haven't figured this out, you know, and they're, unfortunately, the other problem with digital media is they charge too much money. You know, it's like, you know, if I'm going to own a copy of something, and there's actually a lot of problems I actually see right now with digital media when they do this stuff. But, you know, and one of the reasons that there are still reasons I'll go out and buy something on Blu-ray, but I like special features. I also end up finding that I'll pay the same amount of money buying something digitally. If I were to just go about into a store and go buy the same damn product and get more for my money, they need to figure this out. You know, if they don't add the special features, you know, well, they're not packaging it. It's not going into, you know, some, I don't know. They're not doing any of the other typical things that cost, you know, more money to produce these items. So they need to bring it down a little bit, you know, I mean, and more people will probably buy it. That's the thing. So, I mean, their entire model has been really whacked for years, and they need to get on top of it.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree. And back to what you were saying a second ago about, like, packaging and things like that. I mean, if a movie does well in theaters, which the majority of the time, most movies make their budget back.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the marketing, too. Right. It's not always, but, I mean, that's with anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. I mean, this is, like, free money to them.
Yeah.
And they're stupidly, and this is what I keep saying about the music industry too. They're kind of doing the same thing. They're like, and Spotify, in all honesty, needs to be kind of reformed because they're not paying out enough royalties to people. But at the same time, the industry is kind of holding back catalogs and things.
Yeah.
So if, you know, it's like any cable package. You know, you pay $89 for the bottom tier, $99 for the middle tier, maybe $150 for everything, you know, or whatever. There needs to be more models like that. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't mind, you know, with Spotify, I pay $9.99. I wouldn't mind going up to $15 or $20 if I knew I was going to get all the Beatles albums.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
And I think that they need to start looking at this. There are certain prices people will pay for immediacy. Mm-hmm. And that's what they've never wrapped their heads around.
Well,
is that, you know, I'll pay $15 to watch Amazing Spider-Man 2 before Blu-ray if you guys would just offer it. I mean, you're missing money in between, so why not make that money?
And that would just be a rental thing, too. You know, like, and you would probably, if you really liked it, you'd probably rebuy it or whatever even afterward. They have the model for it. They have the ability to do it. They just don't want to. I mean, we talked about this a little while ago. I mean, one of the things that they could definitely do to make this work, and if they still wanted people to come to the theaters, okay, you can give them incentives to do that. You know, special scenes included at the very end of the film like they normally do, or maybe other things that really incentivize the audience to go out and see the movie in theaters. But, you know, for those who don't want to do that, who don't have the ability to go make those trips, or maybe people who don't live anywhere near a movie theater, which actually is very common in this country.
It is.
you know, make this available. Don't give them all the other special stuff, you know, stuff that they have to go see. If they want to see it, got to get to a movie theater. But people will still be able to see what is being played. And it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have to come out immediately. Like maybe 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks.
Right, right.
Maybe at the point where at least most theaters are no longer playing it on a consistent daily basis. It's still a way of making money. And that film can continue making, because, you know, there was a period of time where those films would stay in theaters for 6 months to a year. And that doesn't happen anymore. They got a really small window to make all that money. Doing it this way gives them back that opportunity once again to have those films play all year long, recoup the money that they could have possibly have lost, and expose themselves to a bigger audience, you know, because that's the problem, you know, most hits. A lot of stuff, the independent stuff that we've come to love, like Office Space, for instance, and all of that, those were sleeper hits. Those never did well in theaters, and they were out too fast. With a service like this, like immediately when theaters started dropping it, they put it online like this, and boop, they could have made a shit ton of money, you know? And that's the thing that I don't think they really realize.
Yeah, well, let's hope that this be an eye opener for him. I cannot talk tonight. I say adapted. I did something weird with the word adaptation earlier. But with that said, it is time for everybody's favorite moment. What?
Yeah, and this week for what? We have Dumb and Dumber 2.
The trailer is out, guys.
Yeah.
So I take it the plot of this film is basically Jeff Daniels' character has a daughter he didn't know about that was put up for adoption, and his buddy Jim Carrey falls in love with her. Yeah, I was kind of like figuring this is a DVD rental when somehow Jim Carrey's fingers ends up in an elderly woman and dust comes out.
Oh, God. I watched the trailer myself, and because I actually put it off until we recorded this podcast, and I was just like, I don't know. This film, the original was fine, you know. I'll be honest, I wasn't the biggest fan of it, you know. I mean, I know a lot of people were, and I was a big Jim Carrey fan at the time. Now I'm not such a big Jim Carrey fan, and I don't want to see this film, and I'm not really sure why they even decided that this was a good idea. Like, why would we make this? So I even heard the first announcement on this when they came on the Nerdist podcast. Like, hey, guys, we just signed a deal. We're doing Dumb and Dumber 2.
Yeah, I'm not real excited. It just looks really, like we were talking about earlier, you know, the first one's kind of lowbrow. I guess it is lowbrow. This is, like, really lowbrow. Judging from the trailer, and it's just, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Again, like, just every part of that, like, the scene that totally was like, I'm out, was the whole catheter thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Done, don't need to see it, just, I'm done, you know? So, I have no hopes for this film whatsoever. I wish it well.
Do you?
Not really.
Because
I hope
then
it
we
really
might get a
badly.
Third one.
No, I... Well, actually, technically, this is the third one. You're aware of that, right?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the prequel. Yeah, it is. We don't want a fourth one to add to the mix.
I'll tell you, there was actually one funny scene in the prequel, which was the Bob Saget scene where he goes into the bathroom and he's just like, there's shit everywhere. And he goes on that entire rant. And that's the only funny thing in that film.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. I tell you, I did find on the Dumb and Dumber 2 trailer, the vending machine gag was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was probably the more higher brow of that whole commercial. But anyway.
Yeah, anyway. So that is our show for this week, everybody. Before I go into our normal social networking links and stuff like that I want you to go follow us on, we finally got the Stray Popcorn website up online and ready for you to go check out. The link is straypopcorn.com, as easy as that, and we are posting new content on a regular basis. You can find all of our podcasts there now. We also have all of our social networking links for Facebook, Twitter, and other social media networks that we are trying to expand to as soon as possible, but
we're going to be posting a lot of stories that we don't have time to cover here on the podcast. Brock and myself are going to be writing a lot of articles. And actually, if you are even interested, you're a writer yourself, you're writing about entertainment news, and you have some things that you would like to send our way that maybe we'll post and we'll give you, of course, credit for, just go ahead and send us an email at straightpopcorn@gmail.com or send us a message on our website. We have a contact form there. Yes.
I do have one thing I want to throw out there.
Sure.
We don't currently have any reviews in the iTunes stores, and from what we're looking at on our stats, it's looking like we have a lot of listeners that we didn't expect to have. It would be really, really awesome, guys, if you could go on there and review what you think of the show. Even if you want to tell me that I have a smelly ass, do that shit. We just need to get the word out there a little bit more. Because we're on a momentum right now. I think the last time we checked, we had 700 listeners.
Yeah, we're growing really quickly. And, there are people who are looking for, listeners' feedback about what they think about the podcast. And, if you guys could help us out and just, go and take a moment to give us a review, we would be really appreciative of that as well. So, guys, thank you so much. And please go and follow us on our Facebook, facebook.com/straightpopcorn. We're also on twitter.com at straightpopcorn, so follow us there. All right, guys, that is it for this week's episode. I'm L. Nichols.
I'm Brock Vincent Sharp.
And guys,
and just like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Keep popping, bitches. Natural protection.